Osho, The Miracle, Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
Beloved Bhagwan, Dogen wrote, "Now, when we see the followers of an enlightened Zen master, we realize that they have many difficulties in hearing his true teachings. True aspirants of Buddhism amount to 20 or 30, nay, to 100 or to 1,000. In this case, if a master tries to lead every one of them, he will find the days and nights too short. Further, they have no ear for his teachings, however hard he may try to lead them. But when they give ear to him, his sermon is already finished. When an old Zen master laughs loudly, clapping his hands, beginners and later day trainees in Buddhism seem to have difficulty even in having a chance to find themselves among the attendants. Some of them realize the innermost depths of the master, and others not. Some hear the core of the master's enlightenment, and others not. Time flies faster than an arrow. Life is more transient than a dewdrop. Some may have the master, but regret that they cannot hear his teachings. Some wish to listen to his teachings, but regret that they cannot see the master himself." On another occasion, Dogen said, "My own master never easily permitted new monks to stay in his temple, usually saying, 'Those who, lacking in the Bodhi mind, behave themselves merely from force of habit, must not stay here.' Having turned them out," he said, "they are lacking in the Bodhi-seeking mind. What are they going to do? Such fellows only disturb others. They are not worthy of being allowed to stay here." Seeing and personally hearing this fact, Dogen continued, "I said to myself, living as they are in this country, what sin or crime in their previous existence prevents them from living with my master? Under what a lucky star I was born, that, coming from a far distant foreign country, I am permitted to stay here, to worship his venerable body and listen to his sermon. Foolish as I am, I have been able to form a good and fruitful connection with him."
Manisha, Dogen is dealing with one of the most important aspects of Zen. But his statement is not as exact as it could be. But anyway, he comes very approximately near to the truth. He does not mention and perhaps no Zen master has ever mentioned it. That there are three potentialities. When a seeker comes to a master, he may be only a student. Most of them are. They are in search of more knowledge, because knowledge brings power. Knowledge brings respectability. Knowledge brings honor and dignity. But these are not the true seekers. The second category that comes to the master is the disciple. Zen masters have reached very high as far as human consciousness is concerned. But they have stopped on the second category of the seekers, disciple and the master. There is another category which Zen is not aware, because it was not needed for it. To be a disciple was enough. To meditate, to watch the master, and to create a connection of consciousnesses. It has worked well for Zen, but I can see that something is missing. That is the devotee. The third category of the seekers did not happen to Zen. The masters have reached to the highest peak, but the disciple cannot reach to the highest peak unless he becomes a devotee. And the difference is great. The disciple is satisfied if he is connected with the master, watches his movements, listen to his birds, listen to his silences. Slowly he starts growing an individuality of his own. He may jump from disciplehood into mastership. Zen knows disciples and masters. But a more ancient tradition in India, which has almost disappeared, makes it clear that unless a disciple first becomes a devotee, there is no way of becoming a master. And what is the difference between the disciple and the devotee? The disciple seeks connection. The devotee seeks dissolvement. The disciple seeks individuality. The devotee seeks the ocean. Personality is borrowed, it has to be dropped. Individuality is your own. But if you can manage to drop it also, then the whole ocean is yours. Otherwise, a dewdrop is also beautiful in the sunlight or in the moonlight. But the roaring reality of the ocean and the eternity of the ocean is missing. The dewdrop has no song to sing. The ocean has millions of songs to sing, and millions remain unsung. Although the dewdrop can reflect the moon as much as the ocean, but the depth of the reflection cannot be more than the circular existence of the dewdrop. In the ocean, the same moon penetrates to very depths, miles deep, devotee is dropping even individuality, dropping even the feeling that I am. Just merging with the universe, it is the ultimate quantum leap. From personality to individuality is a very small jump available to many. But from individuality to no individuality is a very rare case. And that's what makes a disciple a devotee. Because Zen tradition knows nothing about the devotee, there is something missing in it. It brings the individual to realize the truth. It brings the individual back home. But the separation of the individual with the master and the separation of the individual with existence in a very subtle form still remains. the disciple still is. He has not forgotten himself completely. He has not dropped even his being. Devotee is a miracle. He simply disappears into the whole, leaving behind not even a trace. Gautama Buddha is reported to have said that the authentic seeker is just like a bird flying in the sky but leaving no footmarks behind. When the bird becomes one with the sky, not only in tune, because in tune you still remain separate, the disciple is in tune with the master, but they are two different instruments. Meeting deeply with each other, but the separation line is there. The devotee simply disappears. Only the master remains. The master itself becomes just a window for him to jump into the beyond. Because the devotee is not at all a part in the Zen tradition, and there are reasons why the world has not appeared. The reasons are that devotees the very word devotee has become contaminated with the idea of God, with worship. To devote yourself, to dedicate yourself, to surrender yourself. But all these words are not the essence of the word devotee. Because of these misconceptions about devotee, Zen has not used the word at all, because there is no God to be devoted to, and there is no worship to be done. You have to be just yourself. But my own experience is that just to be yourself is great, but not great enough. One step more, not to be. Let the pine trees stand in their beauty under the full moon. Let the birds sing. Let the sun rise and set, but you will not be found anywhere. You are no more. The existence is this ultimate step makes the disciple a devotee. No worship, no question of any god, and according to me, unless one is a devotee, not in tune with the universe, but one with the universe, he cannot be a master. Hence, the master is one of the most miraculous phenomena. He is and he is not. He is to you from the outside. He is not at all from the inside. Inside is pure space. This you have to remember before I talk about Dzogchen, because he is talking about the difficulties of the disciples. Dzogchen wrote, now when we see the followers of an enlightened Zen master, in fact, a Zen master has no followers. That is the beauty of Zen. It has lovers. It has people as fellow travelers, but not followers. Others have followers. Following means imitating. Following means step by step. Preparing oneself into a discipline, it is more or less creating yourself in the image of your master. But that again is hypocrisy. I will not say followers of an enlightened Zen master. If there are followers, then the master is not enlightened. If the master is enlightened, there are only lovers, fellow travelers. The question of following does not arise. I make this point with absolute authority that Dzogchen has missed the point. He says we realize that they have many difficulties in hearing his true teaching. true aspirants of Buddhism amount to 20 or 30, nay to 100 or to 1,000. In this case, if a master tries to lead every one of them, he will find the days and nights too sad. Further, they have no ear for his teachings, however hard he may try to lead them. First, the working of a master does not understand. Perhaps these statements were made by him before he himself became a master. This is a difficulty, because in those days there was no printing, no writing, just disciples taking notes. So it is very difficult whether it is Dzogchen's own mistake or the person who was taking the notes. But anyway, we don't know who took the notes. One thing is certain, that something Dzogchen must have said to create the fault. First, true aspirants of Buddhism he is still talking in terms of isms, and Zen is not an ism. Zen is freedom from all isms, Buddhism included. And the aspirants are for the truth, not for Buddhism, not for Hinduism, not for Christianity. These are not aspirants. These are people conditioned, and they are following their conditioning, and they may find a certain solace, a consolation, but they will never find the truth, because truth is not part of any theology. Dzogchen's statements are very amateur. True aspirants is enough. Don't say of Buddhism. Why anybody should be an aspirant of Buddhism? Everybody is a Buddha himself. So it is better to say seekers, aspirants, searchers of one's own being. Why bring theologies in? That is not the Zen way. And he does not know that a master can have thousands of disciples. He may not know even their names. He may not have even met them. It does not matter. His working is a totally different way than things are done in the ordinary world. He simply creates an atmosphere. He does not work with A and B and C, then naturally a man's life is very sad. If he becomes enlightened at the age of 40, as Gautama Buddha became enlightened at the age of 40, he lived up to 82. In 42 years, if he had worked day and night without sleeping, without eating, then too, how many people he would have been able to bring to the consciousness that he has achieved? And that is a very foolish way. There is no need. The very mastery and the art of being a master is to create an atmosphere in which things start happening on their own. What we are doing here, I don't know many of you I don't know your name. I don't meet you personally. I simply create an atmosphere in which you can drown, in which you can drink. The very juice of life. There is no need for me to work on individuals. That is a very poor and primitive way. I work by creating an atmosphere, an energy field. And every day that energy field becomes more and more powerful. Every one of you contributes it. You are not just on the side of taking. You are also a giver. Here, your presence, your consciousness certainly creates a chain reaction. Just the man sitting by your side, you may not know him at all, but in your silences, you meet with him. When everybody becomes silent, there is simply a lake of Buddhahood. One consciousness. One existence. One dance. You are not in tune with existence, you are it. So for the first mistake he thinks that life is Tusar, and a master cannot work on many people. That is absolutely wrong. A single master can work on the whole world. And he need not go out of his room. He can radiate enough energy, invisible rays, to surround the whole globe. Many times I have been reported that some sannyasin has come from New Zealand, or some sannyasin has come even from Soviet Union, and the reason that he simply saw my picture. A friend had my picture, and seeing the picture, a tremendous longing arose in him somehow to reach me. Irrational. But life is irrational. Somebody has read few words in a book and they became a magnetic force that he has to come here. Somebody has heard my condemnation, criticism, and he thought that if so many people and so many magazines and so many politicians are against a man, there must be something in it. Nobody is against on such a vast scale that I cannot enter 21 countries. Their parliaments have passed a law. Just today, I received a beautiful note from Vimal. He had gone to England to change his passport, to bring fresh passport. And he has taken his girlfriend, who is an Indian, to the British High Commissioner in Bombay. The British High Commissioner will not give visa to the Indian woman. They interrogated her for hours. And finally they refused. But Vimal is not a person who will accept any refusal so easily. He asked to see the highest authority. He does not want to deal with assistant commissioner. He wants to see the High Commissioner himself, on what grounds he is denying a visa just for 3 weeks. The High Commissioner said that, to be frank with you, your girlfriend has nothing, no bank account, no home, no particular reason why she should come back again. Vimal said to him that, don't be afraid about that. We have not been saying to you that we are Bhagwan's disciples. She has every reason to be here. She has no reason to be anywhere else. And he has written a note to me. The British commissioner immediately gave the visa. He said, if she is Bhagwan's disciple, then there is no problem. It is for the first time that my name has been of help. Because that makes it certain that she will not remain in England. She can go, have a 3 week trip, or if you want, 3 months, any time. But if she is a disciple of Bhagwan, there is no worry. We were worried that she may not come back. Life is very strange. They were hiding my name. But they forgot that my name has to be kept secret. If you are coming from England, but if you are going to England, it is a different story. The High Commissioner is perfectly satisfied that there is no question of asking any more about the woman. She will come . I have come across many sannyasins who just heard my name and something started, a longing, a desire, as if a forgotten language suddenly is remembered. A master does not work on individuals. He creates an atmosphere, and that atmosphere itself goes on becoming every day more richer, more dense. Its pull, its gravitation goes on bringing new people from far away places. In Rancho Rajneesh, in America, now even the Oregonian newspapers are accepting the fact that our presence in Oregon has made Oregon a world famous place. And in fact, the news media, television, radio, newspapers, magazines, they all miss. They had a tremendously beautiful story with all the colors of the rainbow, with all the rumors that you can manage. We gave them so much material and we allowed them to invent whatever they want to invent. We enjoy it anyway. We don't make much fuss whether it is true or not. Just we kept busy the whole news media. It is almost unbelievable that I was for 2 years the first man, and I was a tourist whose tourist visa has transpired years before. And I was chosen the man of the year because I was discussed more than the president himself. Many times my people said to me that these allegations, we should drag them to the court. I said, stop, don't bother. Let them make as many allegations as possible. Help to create rumors yourself. Let the whole America be concerned with you. And we made within 5 years the whole America concerned. Now the politicians are missing. One of my attorneys had come few days before. He said, now in Oregon, the politicians are missing you very much. I said, why? Because I was a good cause for them to collect the votes of the Oregonians. Because they are against me. Now there is no reason why they should be chosen. And he said, the newspapers are missing, the television is missing, and the man admits who has is spoken in a press conference that all that we want is to silence Bhagwan absolutely. He should not be heard anywhere, he should not be seen anywhere. We will close all the doors to his voice. And Anando has sent him just now 10,000 sannyasins, and poor Admis has been kicked out of his attorney general's status because he has been found guilty of doing many criminal acts. And see, as my secretary has written to him with a photograph of 10,000 sannyasins, that means 20,000 hands raised, that Bhagwan is still being heard. Where are you? It is only a question in Soviet Union where it is almost impossible for anybody to enter. I have my sannyasins. They have never seen me. But they meet in basements. They have been terrorized. By the Russian intelligence, harassed, their books have been burned. So those poor Russians have to type the books and hand to hand those books are moving. Now that America has banned me for 10 years not to enter in America, Russian intelligence has relaxed. Otherwise, they used to think that I must be in favor of America and America's capitalism. Now at least that much is proved, that America has closed his doors to me. Now even sannyasins in Soviet Union started feeling that they can invite me sometime. Things are getting better. The police is no more harassing them. I am sitting here in my room. And I am being discussed in almost all the parliaments of the world. For and against articles every day from Holland, from Germany, from England, from places of which I have not even heard, small places, Bolivia. And just now I have received their congratulations for my birthday. My sannyasins in Bolivia, in Yugoslavia, in Czechoslovakia, it is a contagious phenomenon. To be a master is almost like a dangerous disease. It moves like winds, like clouds. It does not carry passports. It does not believe in any boundaries. A master's existence is always universal. His function cannot be on individuals. That will take ages to bring enlightenment to the world. No, it is not a retail work. It is wholesale. When I make you every night enlightened, it is wholesale. And whatever vibrations you are gathering, you will be spreading without your knowing wherever you go. I don't make anybody a missionary. I don't want you to convert anybody. I want you just to be yourself converted. Converted not to any ideology, converted to your own truth. And suddenly you will start radiating a fragrance for which many are thirsty. Sannyasins have reported me that it is very strange. We have dropped the orange, we have dropped the mala, just so that nobody recognizes us, because the governments, the airports, everywhere the American influence, blackmail, because they all are indebted to America. The sannyasins say that it is very strange, we are immediately recognized. It has made no difference. Even if we say we don't know who is Bhagavan, they said, we know you are a man concerned with Bhagavan. Your very eyes saw. Now I cannot take away my people's eyes. I can give you sunglasses, but then you will be recognized by your sunglasses. Then nobody else in the world will be able to wear sunglasses. We can have a hilarious time, but whoever wears sunglasses is a sannyasi. Dogen does not understand that the work of a master is very subtle, very fine, and it is not in the realm of the visible. It is in the realm of the invisible. So you don't see it, but you know it is spreading. So much fear in politicians of a man who has no nuclear weapons, not even a vegetable cutting knife. I have not seen with my own eyes a vegetable cutting knife. Who cuts my vegetables, I don't know. Why this fear? It seems the very air is ready for me. And the young people around the world are searching for something. They are not satisfied with their old churches. They are not satisfied with their religions or their leaders. There is an immense discontentment all over the world. That is the fear of the politicians, that I can catch up with the youth, with the young, with the fresh, with the intelligent, it is better to avoid me. But the more they try to avoid, the more they make it clear to their people that if these politicians are afraid of a man who has not done any harm to anybody, then it is worth to go to them, that man. Half of my people here are from Germany. It is because of the German politicians who are working in my favor by making laws against me. The intelligent youth can see that if these politicians are so much afraid of a man, then it is better to go and not to miss the opportunity. A master functions like free air. It goes on around the earth like radiation. Dogen must have said these things when he was not himself a master. But what he is saying, is by chance in few points is important. True aspirants I drop off Buddhism. A true aspirant does not remain stuck to be a student. Because as a student he can be only burdened with borrowed knowledge. He can see that this is not his experience. A true aspirant wants to know things as his own experience. He immediately becomes a disciple. But the disciple has few difficulties. It depends on both the master and the disciple how much will be those difficulties. First, they have no ear for his teachings. According to me, there are no teachings, but only a prejudice. You don't need ears. You need a heart which can drink the presence of a master. And he is saying, they have no ears for his teachings, however hard he may try to lead them. Sheer nonsense. A master never tries hard. When a thing can be done very easily, only idiots try hard. And when you understand the way how energy phenomenon works, it is only a question of triggering. It is not a hard job. It is the most easy job. Otherwise, I would not have chosen it. I am myself an example, a lazy man who has never done anything. I saw that it seems enlightenment is perfectly in tune with laziness. I immediately became enlightened. I did not have second thoughts. And for 30 years I have been enlightened, not for a single moment I have doubted. In fact, I am so lazy, I will not doubt. Doubting also takes effort. And once I have become enlightened, why unnecessarily bother? You go on doing hard things. You become enlightened, you become unenlightened. And next day when you see me, you again remember that you are a Buddha. In this hall, only Buddhas sit. It is so easy to be silent. It is so easy to be watchful. It is not an arduous thing. But all old masters made it as if it is a very arduous thing. It is true that very few have the courage to open their heart. So the master can pour himself into them. But it is not a question of any teachings. No master worth the name has any teachings. He certainly has some insights to share. He does not argue. He does not want to convince you. He has no investment in convincing you. He is not interested in converting you to be a follower. It is his joy to share the bliss he has. Because the more he shares it, the more he has it. It is not out of compassion. It is out of simple understanding that the more you share your joy, the more it is. It is a strange arithmetic. The more you give, the more from the unknown sources of existence is received by your heart. Dzogchen is certainly very amateur, but when they give ear to him, his sermon is already finished. That is true. If the master is only concerned with teachings, then by the time the person is ready to listen to him, the sermon is over. But the authentic master is a teaching himself. He simply provokes in you a synchronicity. He brings you closer to His heart, His being, because that is the door to the universal heart. It is an alchemical transformation. It is not a scholarly job. When an old Zen master laughs loudly, clapping his hands, beginners and latter-day trainees in Buddhism seem to have difficulty even in having a chance to find themselves among the attendants. When the old Zen master laughs, if you start thinking about why he is laughing, you have missed. He is simply enjoying it. And if you understand the point, you should join him in his laughter. And you will find that you are laughing in it. Very fresh and new way. You have laughed before. It was very ordinary. This time it seems to be very precious. It has reflected the laughter of the master also. It has joined hands with a tremendous energy. It has reflected the full moon. Your laughter has been a laughter in dark tunnels. You have laughed because you wanted to hide your misery. You laughed because you did not want to expose your sufferings to others. Your laughter was a defense device. But when a master laughs, it has nothing to do with anything to hide. On the contrary, he is laughing because he can see his Buddhahood and he can see your Buddhahood, and he cannot believe how Buddhas can manage to be in suffering. This is the most unbelievable thing, that a Buddha is in misery, carrying essentially the Buddhahood. How you can be in misery? How you can be in suffering? How you can be dry and not blossoming? Zen is a participation with the master's being. He laughs and you join in his laughter, not even bothering why he is laughing. The question why is the most stupid question. Why the roses are so beautiful? And why the clouds today are silent? And why the bamboos go on growing? Everything simply is. At this moment, the master feels like laughing. He does not ask himself why. His laughter is just like a flower. The bush does not ask why this rose has arisen in me. The bush enjoys the dance of the rose, its beauty and its fragrance, without any questioning. Existence has no rationality in it. It is beyond reason, hence there is no question of any teaching. The question is only of sharing.